Welcome to Inner Circle, the premier softball podcast. Here are your hosts, Eric Lopez and Victor Anderson.
And welcome to another edition of In the Circle. Eric Lopez here alongside Victor Anderson. And Vic, of course, the college softball season underway. We just previewed the season in depth with Justin McLeod. And now we're going to talk with Justin in this part about the NPF and very wild offseason it's been.
That's being very generous, sir. Now, of course, you can follow for the previous podcast that we had talking about the college softball season and all things In the Circle. Follow our blog, innercircleblog.wordpress.com. Subscribe to our podcast on Podomatic and iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at InnerCircleSB and send us an email, innercirclesb@gmail.com.
Joining us again, Justin McLeod. Of course, we previewed the Division I season over an hour. We broke down the entire landscape of college softball. Now we're going to have this opportunity, Justin, to talk about the NPF, because while everybody's getting ready for the college softball season, a lot of things going on in the NPF. They just had their meetings this season, the offseason. They announced their schedule, but a lot of big news. A team folded and some drama with the defending NPF champions. I'm just going to serve it up to you. The floor is yours. What jumped out to you from this NPF offseason in the meetings?
Oh, that's too long of a list for one podcast. let's hit the highlights. You hear a lot about the league advancing and all that, but they took a humongous step back this year in my eyes. Just this offseason, the last couple of months since the season ended, and the last couple of weeks just since the beginning of the calendar year. The Rebellion, of course, folding. The final chapter of that tumultuous franchise that went from Carolina to New York and New Jersey and, you know, just back and forth, and then finally ended up in Pennsylvania. And you thought, okay, well, the ownership group has, you know, an independent league baseball team. They know how to run a sports franchise. Maybe this will be it. And they're the ones who end up folding once and for all. I don't want to be I'm trying to make sure I choose my words carefully here. It is unsurprising to a point, because a lot of what we've seen so far in recent years has been a lot of talk, very little action. And I realize that's a little bit firebranded there, but you hear a lot about how people need to get behind it and all that, but no one is going to do that if you can't sustain what you've got. Nobody's going to add if you can't sustain what you've got. And the Rebellion folding was a very large, dark mark to me on the league's future, at least in its current state. I think professional softball, obviously, is something that should be here to stay. These women play at such a high level and perform so well. I mean, you see, when ESPN gives them the time of day, you see web gems galore. You see players like Jessica Mendoza going from being an Olympian and an NPF player now to being one of the top baseball broadcasters. It's just these women are so talented, and they can play at that level, at the high professional level. But in the current state, the league took a significant step back this year, a step back that we haven't seen even in the tumultuousness of that one franchise and adding this team and the secrecy surrounding an ownership and all the questions over the past several years. This is the first major, humongous, Paul Bunyan-style step back for the NPF, and it's one that it's going to take them a while to recover from, if they can recover from it at all.
Wow. And we're not, that is not even touching on the Chicago Bandits, the defending two-time defending NPF champions that had ownership change, and which caught people off guard.
It did, and it's one of those things you don't expect to see a team with two-time defending champions then say, okay, well, our owner's gone, our GM's gone, our coach is gone, we're trading our best players. It's been a heck of a tumultuous franchise for offseason for the Bandits franchise, and it's one that sends them from defending champions coming in, and now they're coming in with so many question marks. It's just insane. It's not something that I think Bandits fans expected. It's not something I think a lot of the Bandits players expected. It's certainly not something I expected until a couple of weeks before the announcement came about. It's tumultuous. I mean, it's the word I keep going back to, but it's the only word I can come up with to describe it. Bill Sokolis, of course, ultimately deciding to leave the team as the owner. He's been the owner for several years now, led them to those championships, Aaron Moore, the GM, has now gone on and he's entered a coaching career. Michael Steuerwald, now assistant GM at the Scrapyard Dogs. You come in, the city of Rosemont takes over the team. They assume management of the team. They make a financial investment, but only for this one season, which asks as many questions as it answers. And then they start trading away players, bringing in draft picks, bringing in money, basically trading players for money. And now they've re-signed some players. They brought some players back. But this season has to come in shrouded in curiosity, in questions, in what the heck is going on here. It's just not something you expect from a team that has two championships, two come-from-behind championships that nobody expected them to win. It's a franchise you thought was at its peak, coming from a lower seed, a three seed this past season behind the upstart Scrapyard Dogs, come from behind, win that series, win the championship series. Nobody expected it, and all of a sudden, when it rains, it pours.
Is it one of those things, Justin, that it could have a possible trickle-down effect for other teams in the league and the MPF as a whole, where if, God forbid, we're talking about the MPF maybe on his last legs. Is this a potential problem for the league down the road if this continues to happen with franchises folding and having other teams cede ownership to other outside sources?
Without a doubt. You can't have it. You can't have one of your most stable franchises go through this much turmoil and not feel aftershocks for a considerable amount of time. And if it was to happen again, say, to Akron, I think the league would not be on its last legs. It would be sitting in quicksand. Right now it's bordering on quicksand. You see a team fold. You see ownership change of one of the more stable championship-winning franchises. You're getting close to that level now. If something like this were to happen again, I think you would be very, very close to the end. I think ultimately the league has to they have to grow from it. They can't, okay, well, a team left, this happened, this, all that. And they can't keep harping on the same things. They have to be proactive and take initiative to keep this from happening again, to keep it from being an off-season clouded in departures and in question marks, and instead make it one that excites the fan base. The NPF is still, even, you know, a couple of decades in its infancy. It's still such a small league. It's, you know, salaries are small, et cetera, et cetera. It's still in its infancy. And in order to grow up through the proverbial toddler, kid, teenage, adult years, out of that infancy stage, the NPF has to grow even from these extreme challenges. And I really don't know the current shape of the league. I don't know if they can do that. I really don't.
Is the failure in the part that maybe they didn't get a partnership with, say, Major League Baseball to support the league, kind of like what the NBA does for the WNBA? The WNBA has been going on for some 20-some years, and a lot of big part of that is the NBA invest in it. So even if the league has its issues, the NBA covers that. NPF doesn't have that. They don't have Major League Baseball covering that. You don't have, say, a Chicago White Sox or a Chicago Cubs chipping in money to help the Bandits, for example. Is that where the NPF has failed?
It's one of the places. I think there's a few places you can see where the NPF has failed. And I do think that's one of them, but it's not something that the NPF needs to look on and say, that's to blame. They can't pass blame there. Is it a place they have failed? Yes. The NBA-WNBA partnership works. Could the NPF-MLB work to the same if it was in existence? Possibly, but also possibly not. The NPF has had several opportunities to do this, do that, and grow, not necessarily in number of teams or even in monetary value, but advance. I mean, you don't have to. If you're at war, you don't have to win the battle to take a step towards winning the war. You know, small things can get you there. Taking a couple of small steps can get you there. And the NPF just hasn't taken those steps. The only steps they seem to be able to take nowadays are backwards.
Give me an example of a couple of small steps you think they should have done that they didn't do, that they could have.
Well, part of it for me, too, and I'm going to redirect your question a little bit, but part of it for me, too, is taking steps to the in the wrong direction. I see those just as much as steps backwards or steps that you don't take. You can't continue to say, oh, well, large companies in the United States don't want to support women's sports because they're not supporting the NPF. If somebody turns you down for, say, a sponsorship of the league, you know, you first, before anything else, have to look at yourself and say, what is it about us that they don't like? And if you can't find anything there, then you go on to, well, is it perhaps, you know, women's sports? You have to take logical steps, but first you have to start with yourself and say, okay, is there anything that we can do better to better entice them, to better bring them in? You see a lot of secrecy around the league. The league endorsed secrecy, ownership, money going around, players. You know, there's so many question marks, especially over the last several years, with the league, with the league top dogs, quote unquote, team owners, etc. There's just so many questions, and you can't grow a fan base of a professional sports league with that many questions hanging around. And instead of answering questions, they've added more questions on top of it. With more teams, seems to come more questions, and questions that don't get answered and get ignored. You can't alienate fan bases. At one point, I was told that Sherry Kemp had said that if somebody was coming to an NPF game strictly to get autographs of the players, that she didn't want them to come because they weren't there to help grow the game. Well, that to me is completely illogical. You have to think, if they're coming and they want autographs from these professional players, that is growing the game. You see tons of autograph seekers who go to MLB games even, who go down to the dugout and they'll stand there for 2 hours before the game, and they may leave before the game starts because they were just there to get those signatures. They're not there to support Major League Baseball. They're there to get the autographs. If you've got that already mimicking in the NPF, you're doing something. Your product is good. But to say, if they're not here to help us grow the league and grow the game and support the league and all that, well, that's just absurdity.
No, I agree with you, and you know, we've seen it. I've covered, obviously I work in college softball and I've done it, and that's one of the things they've done better now is they do the autographs and, hey, just come out to a game. Just come out to a game, maybe you'll like it or not, and make those adaptations. You're right, it seems like the pro game has been refusing to do that. But you're right, that's sometimes when you're in that situation, whether it be softball, I mean, you could go even to other Olympic sports like volleyball, for example. Vic, you cover volleyball when you don't do softball, for example.
Yes.
Whatever attention you can get, whatever way you can get people to come in to watch your product, you got to do that and not be picky about it. And I think that's a valid point, Justin. You know, I think the NPF, for example, I mean, I think and that's why I'm so shocked about the Bandit story, which is another story. But, you know, I thought Chicago did a great job because they have a radio station up in Chicago that carries their games and promotes them a little bit. And they're willing to do that with a deal, whereas other teams in the league don't spend the money. And really, that's what it comes down. Sometimes you got to spend money if you want this to grow. You can't expect to have success without, you know, investing in your product.
And you know what? There's a quote that there was actually a race car driver that said it. Junior Johnson says, in order to make a small fortune, you have to start with a big one. And that means you have to invest.
Yeah.
Invest in the product and get the return on that investment. The problem is with so many franchises are either folding or moving is that these owners are looking to try and get that quick return on the investment, but they're not putting that much to any investment in the first place. So that's why you're seeing franchises like the Rebellion fold after 2 years. And I remember they had a franchise in New York, the New York, New Jersey franchise. That folded after 1 year. There's not really that owners, those owners that understand, I need to get this. In order for us to grow this thing, we have to invest this amount. And we have to invest this time and understand that we may not get it right away, but it's going to grow and grow over time. That's where I think wherein lies the problem, where you don't have those people really understanding that we have to put much more investment in this product so that way we can get that return on it, not right away, but exponentially over time.
Well, and if I can just add something to that, it's not just a monetary investment either. It's an investment of time.
Yeah.
because and of marketing, because yes, money goes into marketing, but you also have to find the right places to put that money. You have to say, okay, what's going to be the greatest audience reach? I mean, the league itself, if you market players that are exciting players and that don't wear one uniform on the same team, that automatically expands it. And that's something the league has only recently begun doing. In past years, every player you saw in the marketing almost
was USSSA or Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got a team in Akron. You had a team in Pennsylvania. You've got a team in Dallas or in Texas now. You've got the Scrapyard Dogs. And they've started expanding that marketing a little bit, and they're seeing benefits from it. That's part of the reason you're seeing, say, autograph stickers like we've talked about come in and want the autographs of these players. They've seen them play, and they're incredibly impressed, and they want their autographs. That is a mark that you're doing something right, that your product, your players, your play is good. Now build off that. But instead, the response seems to be, no, we don't want that. We want to go this direction. Well, sometimes if you're going down a road and you hit, you know, a fork in the road, just because you want to go right doesn't mean you shouldn't go left. Sometimes you have to do a little bit of things that may be uncomfortable or maybe have a question mark to you. Just see, if nothing else, see what happens. Right now, the league is still fledgling. Like I say, even a couple of decades in, there's still so many question marks year in and year out. There's still so little advancement, or so it seems. Okay, something has to give. So what harm is there in trying it instead they're just saying, oh, well, corporate America doesn't want to become part of us. And to me, that's the wrong move. You have to be proactive, and you've got to work your rear end off until you reach your desired result. If that hadn't happened yet, that's as much on the people as it is the ones who are not engaged.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. We could spend hours talking about the league and where does it go from there, but we'll table that. I think that was well said. Let's talk about, in the few minutes we got left here, a couple things on the field. Usually we'll get you on right before the NPF draft. But give us a little tease on the early board. Who are some of the names you like in the top of the board projected for the 2017 NPF draft that jumps out?
A couple of players that I'll mention that I really like their chances, so to speak. I like Morgan Zirkle out of Marshall. I think she's one player whose style of play can translate really well to the NPF. I like, actually, Rochelle Roberts out of Louisiana Monroe, out of the Sun Belt, kind of a mid-conference team. But I think if she gets a chance in the NPF, I think she could do really well. I like Delaney Gourley at Florida. Whether she goes to the NPF or not remains to be seen, but if she does, and in the right environment, I think she could do really well. Another player I like is Bailey Landry out of LSU, the speedster. I just think she can do real well in the NPF in the right situation, if she's given the opportunity, et cetera. That's a few of the players I like. The kid from Florida State, Burroughs, and I like Powers. I think either one of them could go on to an impressive NPF career. And then, of course, I can't not talk about Casey Cooper. Whether or not she plays in the NPF, that's a question mark. If she does, though, I mean, I think she could do really well. She's an impressive player. She's a multi-tooled player. And she's one that I could see having an incredible career in pro ball if she decides to pursue it.
And that's the other thing. We mentioned Morgan Zirkle. She's on that Team USA team right now, national team as of now. And now with the Olympics back in play in 2020 for Tokyo, I think you're going to get more players that are going to be interested in Team USA. And that's going to be interesting, Justin, how the NPF and that whole situation plays out, because I think you're going to get a lot of players now. They're going to want to play international more, but that could be at the expense of the NPF. And that's another issue and an interesting dilemma that the league's going to get themselves into here.
It really is, and like you said, with the Olympics coming back into play, at least for Tokyo, there are several players who rightfully so will want to devote themselves to Team USA to shoot for that Olympic dream, and that's going to hurt the NPF a lot, and how the NPF responds to that is an interesting question mark. In the last couple of seasons, they've shown that they're willing to, you know, let players come in and play half the year. Teams are willing to sign them for, you know, 6 weeks here or there of the season because they think they can provide an impact for the time they do have them. But that adds another dynamic to the NPF. Okay, well, you've got this player coming in for 6 weeks. What do you do when they're gone, or if you don't have them, or et cetera, et cetera? And the fact that the NPF still takes second priority to Team USA, even however many years removed from the Olympics, that says a lot about where the league stands, too. When the league gets to a point that they reign supreme in the priority race between the NPF and Team USA, that's when the NPF will start seeing success. When players choose professional NPF ball over playing for Team USA, that's when the NPF will start really enjoying success.
There's been a lot of moves, free agent signings, trades, and we'll get into this more once we get closer to the NPF season. But give me what's the one or two moves that jumps out at you that will have the impact in the 2017 year?
Well, I think obviously the trade of the power hitters, Edwards and Cervantes from Chicago, makes a big difference. When you've got two hitters like Taylor Edwards and Brittany Cervantes who can knock a bomb over the fence every time they step up to the plate, that is a big loss for Chicago in that you've got to replace two of your best power hitters, two of your best players, two players that on offense any team will fear. And, excuse me, it brings in two players to the scrapyard that are just, it makes that lineup so much more formidable. It makes the scrapyard lineup even deeper 1-9. The heart of that order, you can't pitch around anybody. You want to pitch around every one of them, but they'll end up scoring 3 runs just because their lineup is that deep. I think adding Angel Bunner at USSSA, another trade from Chicago, it's left a lot of question marks for Bandits fans, and rightfully so, because there's not really an explanation given from that. That's one thing about the administration change is the transparency has kind of gone down the tubes. But you see Angel Bunner go to USSSA, a lot of it based off of her performance in the championship series last year, really helping propel the Bandits to that championship. And USSSA adds her. That's another big loss for Chicago and another big addition for USSSA. Usually they go after the flashiest big name, you know, the Lauren Chamberlains, the home run hitters, the ace pitchers. Bunner was effective at Auburn. She played during Auburn's lean years, goes into the pros. She has an okay career, you know, a solid career, if not a spectacular one. And then is a mid-season signee for Chicago last year and completely impresses, turns herself into the staff ace the rest of the way, and really propels into that championship. That is one move to me that can only reap benefits for UTRIP, and it's going to add a lot of question marks to Chicago. That was one player that I really felt like they could keep hold on to and build around in their rebuilding season.
Do you think, you mentioned, that's not the typical, quote, pride move. They usually go for the bigger names and so forth. Megan Willis is now making personnel decisions. That was a big story prior to the meetings. She's up in management now, general manager, first female athlete in the league to make as far as that making that move. Could you see that being a part of Willis's move, is not necessarily have to get every big name, but get a Bunner, for example, that adds to your roster?
Well, I think when you get to the point where you've been beaten kind of, so to speak, unexpectedly 2 years in a row, you have to change your mindset, no matter who you are. If you're the Chicago Cubs, you have to change your mindset. If you're the Yankees, et cetera, you have to change your mindset after that. And one of the ways to doing that is, you know, if you can't beat them, have them join you. There's nothing wrong with that line of thought. And if it helps you win, it helps you win. And yeah, I think with the change of mindset comes in a change of personnel. Those kind of go hand in hand. And I think it's a good move for the Pride to go away from necessarily just bringing in every big name, because some of the best players aren't big names. If you look for best players instead of biggest names, then not only will your on-field product improve, but your overall fan draw, which may be the reason you signed big-name players in the first place, will improve as well, because they like seeing teams that win.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting with the Pride there and going into Vieira. What's the big thing you're looking for between now and the start of the season from the NPF on the field, as far as either a transaction or what's the next thing now, the big question from now until then from a transaction standpoint that is left in the NPF before the season starts, in your opinion?
Not a whole lot, other than the draft. I think Dallas and Scrapyard, or Dallas, the Charge, Texas Charge, and Scrapyard have both added a lot of pieces, a lot of it thanks to the Rebellion's departure. Chicago has just started, you know, adding free agents, re-signing players, etc. And I think that makes an impact. Excuse me, they're finally adding instead of simply subtracting. But as other than that, there's not a whole lot of questions for me between now and the regular season, other than how does the league respond to the tumultuous offseason they've had already? What content, you know, what press releases, what outreach, what response do they have to the different moves and the question marks that are there? And how do they erase those question marks before the season begins? If they can do that, it's definitely 100% a positive sign and a step toward and back in the right direction. If they can't or don't remove those question marks or at least answer some of those question marks before the season starts, it does not bode well for the regular season and the future of the league.
So in other words, what you're telling me, I better make my plans to go up to Chicago in July and see the Bandits play at Rosemont and see Shelby hopefully pitch there, because I may not get that opportunity the following year, huh?
Well, the city of Rosemont's only 100% in for this year.
Wow.
That's documented. So, you know, and that's another thing, too. If the city of Rosemont or someone else doesn't keep the Bandits around after this season, I think that the quicksand that the league would then be in would be fast sinking.
Yep. Vic, road trip. I'm going to have to make some
trips.
Get the games in while we can, buddy. Wow, that's unfortunate. Hopefully things get better there. But, boy, I'll tell you this, Justin, on your new podcast, you're bringing it like you did on this on these two episodes, the previewing the college softball season and the MPF. It's going to be must listen. Tell the audience one more time about what you got going on, because you got a lot of big things coming up here on Justin's World there.
Yeah, we do. We just started our Dugout Chatter podcast. The first episode will be out soon. We're going to do it all through the college and MPF seasons. We're finishing up our preseason coverage of college ball, and we're getting ready for the coverage all through the season, all 32 league team divisions. And then we're going to do the mock draft for the NPF coverage all this year. There's a lot of content always coming out, and you can find it all online at justinsworldofsoftball.org, Justin's World of Softball on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter.
Justin, fantastic stuff as always. Vic, where can they find us?
Yeah, they can find us on In the Circle SB on Facebook and Twitter. Subscribe to our podcast and on iTunes and Podomatic. Of course, follow our blog, inthecircleblog.wordpress.com. And if you want to send us stuff in more than 140 characters, send us an email, inthecirclesb@gmail.com.
Justin, great stuff. We'll get you back right around draft time in the MPF. We look forward to all the new content you got going on in the podcast, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. I always enjoy being on. I appreciate y'all having me.
For Justin McLeod, for Victor Anderson, I'm Eric Lopez. Hope you enjoyed this edition of In the Circle.